What's going on, sports fans? Welcome to yet another episode of the 51-Yard Line. Episode Shaquille O'Neal. Or that's 34 if you're not picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah.
That's a new thing that I'm doing, Drew.
I like it.
Do you?
I think there's... What other 34s, famous 34s, have there been?
You know, I was trying to rack my brain on that just like a couple minutes ago, and I'm drawing a blank.
Is Herschel Walker 34?
Was Dale Davis 34?
I have no idea. Herschel Walker, I think, was 34.
Was he?
Might have been.
Well, regardless, we're going with episode Shaquille O'Neal because that's the only one that I can definitely remember right now.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have a fun time picking 35, 36, 37, 38, and 39. And even 40.
And you don't have to worry about double zero, so that's awesome.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. As always, I'm Tyler Berry, and sitting right in front of me is, the one, the only, the incorrigible Drew Willard.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
It's just him and me tonight. We're gonna get into a little football, we're gonna get into a bunch of postseason baseball. You know, we're a couple games into the divisional series at this point, but there's still a lot of postseason baseball left to play, so we're gonna talk a lot about it. But first, I wanted to hand the mic over to you, buddy,
sure.
So let you get something off your chest.
I guess, recently, Greg Hardy, defensive end for the Dallas Cowboys, formerly defensive end of the Carolina Panthers, has been reactivated this week following a suspension for his conduct, off-the-field conduct, last season, the 2014 regular season. Hardy was suspended after, what did he play, two games or three games?
Gosh, I think did he it even was, get to the third
I,
game?
I think it was the
it?
Third game because a lot of people in the media were pressuring Carolina to deactivate him after the Vikings made the decision to deactivate Adrian Peterson for his off-field conduct.
Correct.
Which is a conversation for a different day. However, the NFL suspended him for the entire season up to that point. And basically... He threatened his ex-girlfriend, threw her on a futon full of assault weapons. I won't get too into the details, but it's very violent, very graphic. He initially was charged and then acquitted after his ex-girlfriend failed to show up for an appeal trial. And so he got off. That being said, he still served a 4-game suspension, which he did not appeal. And he has now been reactivated. After being dropped by the Carolina Panthers outright, Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys decided it was time to scoop him up because he's good at his job. I'm not here to discuss the type of player that Greg Hardy is on the field. I mean, we haven't seen him play yet this season, but up to this point, he's an excellent defensive end. However, the one thing that has bothered me about his reactivation, first and foremost, has been his comments. When asked if he was ready to go by Dallas media, I believe his exact words were, "Yep, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to come out guns blazing." Not a particularly good mood.
Poor choice of words.
Yeah, I just think it's a very poor choice of words.
Almost, I know he's not a dumb person. It's almost like it was kind of just a... joke.
I don't think he cares at all.
I don't think he does at all. I think he was making that comment just as a joke because I hadn't heard that until you said something to me like an hour ago, and I was just like, "Oh, he knew exactly what he was doing when he said that."
And it got worse from there.
Mm-hmm.
When asked about the New England Patriots, someone specifically asked him about Tom Brady. I don't think that media member was asking him about Tom Brady. And Tom Brady's person, it wasn't really inquiring about Tom Brady and how Greg Hardy felt about his personal, you know, off the field life. More or less, how are you preparing for Tom Brady? What do you think of Tom Brady as a quarterback? Hardy took a different route. Hardy took the route of, commenting on the attractiveness, the appeal of Tom Brady's wife, Gisele Bündchen, saying, I think something along the lines of, I love Tom Brady. Have you seen his wife? I hope she comes to the game. I hope she comes to the game and all of her sisters comes to the game. Overall, just a really, really, really poor media session right out of the gate. It just was not well handled. I don't think the Cowboys did a lot of prep. If they did a lot of prep, it was he ignored it, and it was done poorly. I commend head coach Jason Garrett coming right off the bat and saying straight up, you know what? That's you know that this was addressed immediately. We disciplined him. We told him that this is not something we want from him going forward. That doesn't bother me at all. And what Hardy said bothered me. Obviously, it should bother many people. It should bother his teammates. Specifically about this situation, that bugs me most is when the media asked, when Jerry Jones was asked how he felt about Hardy's comments. Jerry Jones did not take the same approach that his head coach took. Jerry Jones sort of doubled down on what Hardy said and basically said, oh yeah, I think Gisele Bündchen is extremely attractive in my eyes. When I saw that Tom Brady married Gisele Bündchen, he went up tenfold in my mind. I thought that he was awesome for it. Basically, didn't discipline him, didn't mention any discipline, didn't really... Like I said, didn't take the route that his head coach took in saying, you know what, that is not the way we want to represent ourselves as a franchise moving forward. What really bothers me about that, and I'll open this up to you because I really want to hear what you said. Since coming into the league, Dez Bryant, not recently, but Dez Bryant, upon entering the league, had some issues early on off the field.
He did.
With conduct. It basically, I would say the pinnacle of that, I would say the culmination of that, it really came to a front when there was that altercation between Dez Bryant and his mother, and his mother called the police on him, said that he hit her. Jerry Jones was livid, was super upset, so much so that he basically put a committee together, like a behavior committee to follow Dez around, gave Dez Bryant a curfew. I mean, they, honest to goodness, they really, really just babysat Dez Bryant. And they were like, look, if you want to be a part of this league, if you want to be a part of this franchise, these are the rules you need to follow. And you need to follow our rules. You can't be out late, you can't be in clubs, you can't be here, you can't be doing this, and we're going to have a security team following you around the whole time. And Jerry Jones is very vocal about how he wanted this done. So, Dez Bryant does that, gets in trouble, Jerry Jones brings the hammer down, and then gets this plan in place, and basically, for lack of a better word, robs Dez Bryant of some of his civil liberties. Like, I understand it was put in place to help Dez Bryant and to help his off-the-field conduct, but really put Dez in a box and said, this is how you're going to be. This is how we expect you to carry yourself off the field. Obviously, that was a big part of why Dez held out until he got a better contract. I did what you asked. I've balled out on the field. Give me my money. So Greg Hardy has this whole ordeal. The Cowboys pick him up. I'm sure there must have been a conversation about what they expect out of Greg Hardy coming into the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. As far as the way you need to carry yourself to the media, off the field.
Sure.
And then Greg Hardy comes out and says all these, I mean, roughly misogynistic things. Really just shows us and the franchise, the Dallas Cowboys, that he doesn't get it. And he's unapologetic about not getting it,
well,
you know?
It doesn't even just show us. It solidifies what people already thought that
exactly.
They knew. He could have easily come out and carried himself to a higher level than we've seen him in the
past.
And people would have been like, okay, it's still not okay what he did, but at least he's trying to be better and at least respect these media situations that he's in, and obviously he hasn't done
this
that.
Was a big deal. Like
it's a bigger deal than, because I've done nothing but watch ESPN and watch sports all day. I didn't catch any of this until you came home and told me.
Absolutely, and that's what bugs me about it. If I'm Des Bryant, I gotta be looking at the owner of my team like, really? So
I'd be livid if I was Des Bryant.
I mean, you can just shoot your mouth off, say whatever you want. And here's the other thing. What Ray Rice did was, I mean, last year, as far as off-season conduct goes for NFL players, that had to have been the worst year ever.
Absolutely.
Ever. In the history of the league, ever. In the history of sports, you could argue. One of the worst seasons for off-the-field conduct. I mean, it was just awful. That being said, we're just coming off of a month where, you know, there were no player arrests. It was the first, unbelievable. I mean, really, when you think about it, at the rate everything seemed to be going, that's just astounding. But, you know, the NFL's starting to get into a better place. You've got Adrian Peterson reforming, but not really showing a whole lot of contrition, but, you know, it's
but at least he's not doing anything to make it worse.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he stepped up to the podium, he returned to OTAs, he's been a part of the team, and he's been a good teammate.
Yep.
He hasn't commented on his conduct.
Yep.
He hasn't, you know, it's really, for the most part, he's focused on football, and that's literally, you know, as a Vikings fan, you want him to show more contrition. You would like him to really understand the error of his ways. He's really mostly ignored that part of it. But he's gone out, he's played football, he's done his job, and he hasn't made a big fuss about it. Ray Rice, obviously don't condone what Ray Rice did. Ray Rice is doing everything he can to get back in the league. He's doing his best to show contrition. Then you've got a guy like Greg Hardy who literally just doesn't give an S. And I'm sorry, Jerry Jones needs to step up and be like, you know what? Because Jerry Jones is putting his reputation on the line by picking this guy up off of free agency.
And then by agreeing with his
basically,
comments.
Basically. Like, and not only agreeing with his comments, but going against the head coach. I just think this is a much bigger deal. Maybe I'm making a big deal out of nothing. Maybe his comments are taken totally out of context. But I'm so bothered by, I mean, obviously I'm bothered by Greg Hardy's conduct, but I don't understand why more people are not coming down on Jerry Jones. As the owner who signed him, gave him his contract, gave him a new home, a new jersey, a new number. You know, just basically giving him a new lease on life. This is his first opportunity to speak publicly as a member of the Dallas Cowboys. And this is how you open. And you as an owner basically just double, like I said, just double down and say, it's all good. It's whatever. Oh, yeah, I think Tom Brady's wife is super hot. I completely agree. No, I'm sorry. That is total crap. Coming from a fan of a franchise who's seen ownership handle many different things in a completely wrong way, this to me is the epitome. I mean, this is exactly why people hate the Cowboys. Stuff like this. Maybe that's just my opinion on it. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on it, but I was dumbfounded. I honest to goodness was dumbfounded. Maybe I should be less surprised by these sorts of things from Jerry Jones. But I think as an owner, you need to back your head coach, for one. So it's your job to back your head coach. And two, you need to let people know, like, look, this is not why. I brought him in to be a good defensive end. I didn't bring him in here to cause a distraction and to F things up. And believe me, this is going to be addressed. And he didn't do any of that. And that's what's most troubling. Greg Hardy has proven that Greg Hardy is going to do whatever he wants. He doesn't care. He had that whole rap video that was released about how he's not going to let another woman play him. And he is what he is. He doesn't care. Fine, whatever. It sucks. You're a douchebag. But as the owner of arguably the most popular and most valuable franchise in all of sports in the world, I'm just sick. I'm totally sick over it. And like I said, if I'm Des Bryant and you're putting the kind of choke chain and leash on me and my conduct and making me act a certain way, and then you just double down on what Greg Hardy said and basically blowing it off as no big deal. That's a bunch of crap. That's just all I really have to say about it. I really wanted to get that out there. I can't understand why it isn't being addressed more on sports outlets, media. I haven't seen really anything out of it. I think it's a much bigger deal than people are making it out to be.
I'm going to do my best to not stoop to generalizations when I say what I'm about to say, but I'm going to stoop to generalizations. First of all, I don't think you're overreacting at all. Those comments, the way they were framed and how they were framed by someone who clearly knew exactly what he was saying when he was saying it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that should be an automatic suspension right there. I think that should be a game. I don't think you should be back against the Patriots. That's all I have to say about Greg Hardy. It's not going to happen because that's just not how things go.
It would be awesome if that is the way the discipline conduct policy was in the NFL, unfortunately.
But we don't have a clear enough discipline conduct policy in the NFL for that to ever happen. And that's a complete other issue for a complete other day. Second of all, if I'm Tom Brady, I can't wait.
Oh, hell yeah.
To play this game.
He's already mad. He's already mad as hell.
Yeah, that's a second thing. You haven't played in a year, and you want to piss off an already pissed off FU mode Tom Brady coming off a week of rest? Are you seriously that mental? I mean, clearly you are based on the things that you have been accused of doing. As for Jerry Jones, I would like to say, and this is where I'm going to generalize, I'm sorry if this comes off as being really rude, but I don't like Jerry Jones. And as far as I'm concerned, an old, white, rich Texan making misogynistic comments or backing them up, as he clearly just did, I wish I could say it surprised me.
That's a good point.
I wish I could say it surprised me. And yeah, that's a generalization, and there are Cowboys fans out there who I'm sure would be really upset at me saying that. I'm sorry. Your owner sucks. Guess what? My owner sucks, too.
My owner's not great either.
That's another problem that I won't talk about too much right now, but there's a problem in the NFL where all our owners are old and white. That's a problem to me. I'm sorry. There needs to be more diversity in ownership in the NFL, but that's not going to happen right now, clearly, because that's just the way it is, and that's right. The kind of control these guys have over the franchises that they own. And frankly, they make more and more money every year, so who the hell is going to sell? But that's neither here nor there. The point is about Jerry Jones. It's been said for a long time now, and even diehard Cowboys fans, like even Skip Bayless, has to agree that it's gotten to a point where Jerry Jones is kind of off his rocker. He doesn't back up his head coach, as you just said. He's been known to really be the head coach. People call him Coach Jerry. You're playing in Jerry's world. Like, this is Jerry Jones' team. Why not just call it the Jerry Jones Cowboys?
I mean, he's drifting into Al Davis territory. Yeah. I mean, and God rest,
he's,
you know.
Dare I say he's drifting into fucking, wow, I'm drawing a blank on his fucking name.
Who does he own?
The old Clippers owner.
Oh, Donald Sterling.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not the same thing, but he's drifting toward that territory of, he's saying more and more,
it's just so out there,
out of touch things in the media. He's doing more and more. Becoming more and more out of touch with his players, with his front office, which is with his coaching staff. It's how much longer are we going to give this guy before people are actually like, wow, should this guy really be the owner of an NFL franchise when we're already having so much negativity in the media? Do we really need more from an owner? That being said, these comments cannot go by the wayside from Greg Hardy, but they also Jerry Jones also can't just get away with backing them up, but he will because he's an old white rich Texan who owns a storied franchise in one of the most storied league.
Yeah, in the NFL.
It's sickening, though. It's sickening disgusting. To hear that that is going on, and it's sickening to hear that the media is not making a bigger deal about it when they make a big deal about deflated football that footballs exactly. that are deflated. What? Half a one PSI under what they're supposed to be when the team's already winning by 35 points.
100% agree.
But we won't make a big deal about someone making misogynistic comments after they've already been accused of assaulting a woman, and then their owner
and
backs him
to kill her.
Up. Yeah, and then their owner just backs it up like it's all a fucking joke. Sickening.
More needs to be done.
And yeah, you and I are probably overreacting a little, but no, you know what? No, actually, no.
I don't think
we are.
After last year and the way things have gone,
I don't think. I take that completely back. I think everybody else is underreacting, and you and I are completely right on board.
And now that you bring it up and we're talking about it, Goodell should address this. I feel like this is not something.
This is not okay.
Exactly.
It's not okay. And yet again. Did they really hurt anybody in this particular instance? No, but that's not the point. The point is negative comments were made and then backed up by an owner. There should be punishment for both of them.
I completely 100% agree.
And again, I don't have the best owner in the world, but if Jim Irsay can get suspended for something completely unrelated to football, why can Jerry Jones go into the media, back up someone who's been accused of assault and threatening to murder a woman, and then their owner backs them up in their goes against the head coach, and then no one even says anything about it? Why is that okay?
It shouldn't be. It really honestly shouldn't be. And
Goodell won't say anything about it because he's under the tutelage of the owners.
Exactly. So And Jerry Jones is one of his biggest backers.
Yeah.
One of his biggest backers. He would never say anything against Jerry Jones. If there's anybody still out of... I mean, and you talk about the relationship that Kraft and Goodell used to have. That's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Goodell needs all the support he can get from any owner. Any owner at all. And there's no way that he's going to go back on Jerry Jones, who owns... Didn't Forbes just release that the Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable franchise in the world?
I believe you're right.
It's obnoxious. It's obnoxious. Pisses me off. There's no contrition. And that's the thing. And you know what? Jason Garrett's got a job to do. He's focusing on the New England Patriots. If he's doing his job he's probably not thinking too much about his boss and his comments and going back on the comments that Garrett said, but it's just
definitely made me respect Garrett more.
Oh,
for coming
absolutely.
Out and being like, "No, that's not
immediately." Nope. Like we addressed this right away. Like with
clearly he didn't. Clearly he didn't wait for Jerry's approval to do it
not
because
have.
Jerry acted like nothing was wrong. It's sickening to know that. Like I said, I'm generalizing, but it's a problem that our ownership is solely made up of white males from a completely far and gone generation.
Very
because it
much
still
so.
Shows.
Very
it
much
shows.
So.
And it doesn't show often, but it shows in situations like this. And it's a problem. And it needs to be addressed more than it is.
And you know, I've already said it. I'm just going to say it one more time. I don't understand how Jones, who views Dez Bryant is such a valuable asset, would come down on him so hard for his off-the-field
yep.
conduct as to set so many parameters for the way that he has to carry himself that he wouldn't be more diligent about something like this. You know what I'm saying?
He
looks at Dez Bryant as a super, truly valuable asset to his team. He clearly feels the same way about Greg Hardy, or you don't bring a guy like that with that kind of baggage on.
Yeah.
You just don't. So how does it not apply? How do you not... You go up to the podium after... Because I remember the quote that Jerry Jones used when Dez had that scuffle with his mother. And Jones said, when they asked him about it, he goes, you know, sometimes, he goes, I was really mad. I was really mad about it. And I believe the quote was, he said something along the lines of, like, I really wanted to come down hard on him, but sometimes daddy shouldn't spank when he's angry. But Jones clearly, he clearly displayed to the media, I'm not happy with Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with the way he's carrying himself. I'm not happy with the potential he has and the way he's squandering it with this kind of off-the-field behavior. I'm coming down hard. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to get a plan in place. I'm going to have a support system. We're going to give him structure. We're going to give him very strict parameters by the way he needs to carry himself off of the field. And then Greg Hardy goes and does this with all of his baggage and everything he did in Carolina, and you basically just brush it off. Are you kidding me? Are you serious right now with this? Again, you said
terrible.
Your owner's not great. My owner's getting sued in New York for real estate crap all the time. I believe a judge compared it to basically organized crime. So jeez. I'm not trying to toss stones. I'm not saying that that my team is the greatest, that Ziggy Wilf is the best owner in all of sports. I'm not super happy that the taxpayers of Minnesota are basically paying for half of a stadium that this man could clearly pay for himself. But this is just wrong. And if the NFL is truly serious about trying to reform their image, at least in the public eye, these are the types of situations that need to be taken seriously by the owners of the teams and by the commissioner. And nobody's saying anything about it.
Nope.
And I just wanted to get that off my chest. And we've probably gone on way too long about this already. So
I think it needed to be addressed.
But I just, I saw the comments. I saw the rap video this morning.
Mm.
I don't know. I was disgusted. Obviously I'm disgusted with Greg Hardy, but I think this reflects more on Jerry Jones than it does on Greg Hardy.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
So let's talk some sports.
Yeah. All right. Grade the player, Drew.
Sure. I can do that.
All right. So we're a few days late, obviously, tomorrow. Well, if you're listening to this, which you're probably not listening to it until at least Sunday. So today is, or whatever day it was, is week 5. But we're going back to week 4. So I don't know. Grade Mike Tomlin.
Ooh, that's tough. I would like to come down. I like Mike Tomlin a lot. Rapid fire reaction right off the bat. I'm gonna go with a C minus.
Okay.
I think it was a really, really. I don't disagree with the decision to go for it twice on 4th-and-1 in overtime. I don't. With the kicking issues you have, Scobie's garbage.
God, he's bad.
You need Sweason back so bad. I hate the NFL preseason, by the way. I don't know if we've talked about that before. I feel like we've mentioned that a few times, right? We've talked about that. Preseason sucks. But I have no problem with him going for it on 4th-and-1. What you're doing trying to roll out geezer Mike Vick and then making Mike Vick sit in the pocket and throw. I understand he's your backup quarterback. He has to make plays, but you're 4th-and-1 twice or 4th-and-short twice. Give the ball to your Le'Veon Bell cow. I'm sorry. Just do it. He's, at this point, I mean, where we are in the season, 4 games in, it's either Le'Veon Bell or Adrian Peterson. You can make the argument that either one of them right now is the best back in the NFL. Give him the ball.
Yeah.
Give him the ball. He's back. He's hungry. He said last week after the Roethlisberger injury, I can handle the workload. Who cares if they know you're going to run it? If they know you're going to run it, don't run it with Mike Vick. Again, I like Mike Tomlin.
I think
the Steelers are going to get it figured out. I really do. I'm not writing them off completely to not win. I still believe that they can win the AFC North. I believe it is a I do believe it is a possibility. But the play call decisions. Roll out Mike Vick on 4th-and-1 in overtime, and then to try and throw a little out pattern to Antonio Brown. Granted, Brown's wide open, but I don't want Mike Vick to have anything to do with either of those plays. I really don't. You give the ball to your playmaker, and your playmaker is Le'Veon Bell. So, yeah, C minus.
Jameis Winston.
Oh, boy. That was a rough outing. That was a really rough outing. I want to go D plus. That offensive line, though, is so bad. But, God damn it, he needs to find ways to get the ball to Mike Evans. I mean, granted, Vincent Jackson had a great game. D plus. It's rough right now for the kid. I don't want to come down. You got to grade the performance, and the performance was bad. That offensive line is crap, though. I can't give him an F because he needs some time. He just does. When he actually has time to throw the ball, he looks like the guy. He does. Mm-hmm. He stands tall in the pocket. He looks composed. He doesn't panic. He has made some great throws, but it's still he's not making the right reads. That offensive line, though, is so bad. And it sucks because the offensive line, it's not only bad with pass protection, it's terrible run blocking, too. So you can't even get Dougie Martin going to back guys off of him. So D+. If it was any other quarterback, maybe go with an F. But he's a rookie.
Yeah.
I'm going to go D+.
Andrew Dalton.
A-.
I think it's, you know, we're only a quarter of the way through the season, but I think it's safe to say I was wrong.
We're a quarter of the way through. He looks, dare I say it, elite.
He looks I don't know what happened, but he looked... You know what? I'm still not going to say I'm wrong, because until he wins a postseason game...
Exactly.
But he looks really good.
And if you if you want to bang that drum, he's never won in the postseason. And if you also want to say, well, you know, we've seen this before. He'll throw 4 touchdowns, no interceptions 1 week, then he'll come out and throw 2 and throw a clunker.
But he has not done that thus far. He's had all good games.
This weekend, this Sunday, is going to be his first, I think, real, real test.
Yeah.
You got to play Seattle. If he can continue the efficiency, he has a 123 passer rating. He's averaging 10.9 yards an attempt. He's got 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's elite. He's right up there. The way he's playing right now, he is right up there with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying that he's better than Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying he's better than Tom Brady. I'm just saying right now, it's elite. I'm only giving... I should go A. I'm just saying A minus. He's got a hell of a running back duo behind him. I mean, right now, in credit to... credit to Coach Lewis. It's been a really good start. They're doing a great job finding ways to use both running backs. Yeah, dude, A minus, maybe A plus, maybe an A. He looks good. He looks elite. Through 4 games, he looks really, really good.
Duke Johnson, my man.
Duke Johnson, that bomb that he caught in the back of the end zone, that was
unbelievable. For a running back to catch that.
In a good throw by McCown.
Yes, it was.
Good throw by McCown, and I hate to make this about somebody else, but that play is all the more reason why you should have, now that you know that Duke Johnson has the ability to stretch the field in more ways than one, I think you got to go Johnny Football. Travis Benjamin is showing that he has speed and that he can stretch defenses and that he's not somebody that defenses should be sleeping on. If Duke Johnson can perform in the exact same way that he did this last weekend, it was a pretty decent performance. That play vaults it up a lot more. I mean, if he doesn't have that play, I don't know how good of a performance it is.
I think he still had 100 yards rushing, didn't he?
I would be happy to check on it right
now. I think that's why I ended up. I think that's why I added him to this list, because I wanted to know what you thought. I think he had 100 yards.
He looked good, and he looks fast. He looks healthy. I mean, wasn't one of the issues with Duke Johnson that is he going to be able to stay healthy? I believe those were the issues, some issues that he had with his size.
Okay, no, I'm wrong. He didn't have 100.
So it was. It was a big play, but it was not only. It was a big play. It was a big play at a big time. I mean, they needed to have that. That was a big score late in the game.
All right, he had 116 all-purpose yards and a touchdown. So
that's
still
great
because really
it shows versatility.
Yep.
Again, even more reason. I'm not trying to make it about somebody else.
I got it.
Did you give
him a grade?
I would say. I mean. B minus, B.
Okay.
That works for me. you throw Johnny Football in there, and then it's only one game, but then you need to start worrying a little bit more about two guys in the backfield that have legs. So, but yeah, no, that was a hell of a catch.
Last one, Megatron.
Oh. That fumble was brutal. But the fact that the fumble was caused by Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor's my, personally, outside of Harrison Smith, I think if you're going to grade safeties in the NFL, or if you're going to power rank safeties in the NFL, at this point where we are four games into the season, I think Harrison Smith, Homer Button, Minnesota Vikings, and Cam Chancellor are interchangeable. I'm going to go C plus. I'm going to go C plus because. He still had a fairly decent game, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember his exact stats, but
that's such a big moment, and you've got the ball in your hands, and you're so close to the goal line. It was, yeah. I gotta go C plus. I mean, he's Megatron, and throughout that entire game, I mean, he was pretty much their offense to that point. And credit to Stafford, that was a hell of a performance by Stafford as well. Yeah, he had 7 receptions, 56 yards. Not great by any stretch of the imagination, but you're in Seattle, Legion of Boom. You needed that score, though. Yeah, I'm going to go C+. I'm not going to be too hard on him. Because without him, I don't know what Detroit is. I really don't. That was huge. But I don't know if you've got the refs on deck for a grade, but I know what grade I'd give them.
I was thinking about that just a second ago. Yeah, grade the refs.
That's an F.
That's an F.
It's not. I didn't know that was a rule.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I thought that I knew that was a rule either.
In the moment, I thought it was a heads up play. But that's the thing. It's not our jobs. It's not the players' jobs to know the rules. It's the officials' jobs to know the rule. And the fact that Bill Belichick said it best, and he's been saying it for a long time. There should be universal replay. There should be. Or at least universal replay inside of 2 minutes. If you're going to have plays and moments that affect outcomes, because correct me if I'm wrong, if they call that play correctly, Lions get the ball at the 6.
Lions at the 6, first and goal.
I don't know how much time's left either. But yeah, I'm to be completely honest with you, that's straight up an F. And there needs to be... this is another discussion for a different day. We need to find a way. And I love Ed Hockley, but in light of his comments to Cam Newton, refs need to be held more accountable.
Yep.
They do.
I have a problem with Ed Hockley's comments.
I do too, and I like Ed Hockley.
Me too.
And Ed Hockley's been in the league a long time, has a lot of equity, usually does a good job. He's had some bad moments. Any ref does. But because of that, there needs to be more accountability.
Yes.
And you know what helps that? Universal replay.
Agreed.
The game is just too fast for refs.
Yep.
They're human. They make mistakes. If it's going to decide the outcome of a game, though, you need universal replay.
I completely agree. So. All right. Is there anything you wanted to address about the Vikings?
I guess as far as the Vikings go, made a trade. Traded starting middle linebacker Gerald Hodges for a 6th-round pick to San Fran.
Mm-hmm.
And a center, kid named Easton, don't know much about him, haven't looked anything up. I guess if we're going Homer on it, A lot of Vikings fans were shocked. I was shocked at first, but then when I had a chance to really think about it and I had a chance to listen to Paul Allen, play-by-play announcer of the Minnesota Vikings, talk about it a little bit more, started to make sense. Eric Kendricks has played really well at inside linebacker. Anthony Barr has also played very well. I mean, Anthony Barr, actually, even beyond playing really well, I would say Anthony Barr has been a stud. I think Zimmer feels super confident in his depth at linebacker going forward, and the depth at offensive line is rough for us right now. I think the offensive line, more so even than the Blair Walsh miss, as much as I am super mad about that, depth at offensive line could be this team's undoing as far as playoff hopes go. Teddy looked awesome. Awesome. Went on the road in one of the hardest venues to play as a visitor. Looked poised, in control. If the offensive line can just get their shit together for that two-minute drive, just long enough for that two-minute drive, we might, I'm not saying we're going to win, but we might go to overtime. We might win it. I don't know. But he was 13 of 15 in the second half, and he was still running for his life. And he had a hell of a run. I think it was either on 3rd and 9 or 4th and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And he totally went John Elway helicopter on the bit to get the first down. Yeah, I guess that if there's any sort of talkers moving into the bye week, that would be it. I was shocked at first just by how good of a training camp Gerald Hodges had, and just looking at who the leading candidate is to replace him at middle linebacker, being a rookie. That being said, Eric Kendricks, as a rookie, has played very, very well. And Zimmer rotates his linebackers enough
mm-hmm.
where Kendricks isn't going to be an every-down middle linebacker. They're not asking him to be Ray Lewis.
Right.
Zimmer is very fluid in the way that he uses his linebackers, so I'm okay with it. I've learned to become okay with it. Again, I need to learn more about this center Easton. Offensive line is a problem. And I think, I got to read up on this Easton kid, but if this kid is even remotely good enough to handle the center duties before John Sullivan can come back, you can move him in at center, kick Mike Harris out at the friggin', what is it, right guard? Yeah, right guard, because he's terrible at right guard. All due respect to Mike Harris, you did not have a good game against Denver. But you can boot him out, slide Berger from center to right guard, and maybe have a little bit more confidence moving forward and giving Teddy some time. And plus, you got the 6th round pick that you lost when you traded for what's that guy's name, Sherrills from San Diego. The move basically, I think, was made to shore up depth on the offensive line, and Zimmer felt super confident in his depth at linebacker. I'm really happy that the bye is early this year. Going into the season, you never really want an early bye. You'd like a mid-season bye or maybe a little bit later bye because you want to get shit together for postseason run. But I think after the dumpster fire performance on the road against the Niners, then coming back and looking very strong in 2 games on the road, and then playing a really tight game against a really good defense on the road in Denver, this is the right time for a bye, and this is a time where if you want to shuffle around the offensive line and you want to kind of see where you're at, you can experiment with some things, and I think that's what Norv Turner wants, and that is why the move was made. So,
okay.
I think it's going to be a hell of a season moving forward. I think it's going to be exciting. I think the Vikes proved that they can go, and with a loss of Denver, it moral victories mean nothing in the NFL. They don't mean anything in professional sports. But I think at least for a team as young as it is, they showed themselves. They learned that okay, we can go anywhere and we can play with anybody. We can play tight with anyone. I feel like we might be heading to 8-8. That being said, I think it's going to be a very competitive 8-8. I think that Niners game is an aberration. I don't see us getting blown out in many games, barring significant injury mm-hmm. going forward. So, how do you feel about the Colts?
All right. So what I will say is, Great. We beat Jacksonville by 3 in overtime. Big whoop. We beat a clearly much worse than anyone thought Texans team by 7.
Holy God, it's bad.
A team that has no idea what they want to do at quarterback. And as much as I really respect Bill O'Brien, him saying that we're treating each game as a one-day season for who's the starting quarterback might be the dumbest philosophy I've ever fucking heard.
Do you think sidebar real quick, do you think he really believes that? Or do you think he's just trying to instill some confidence?
I just don't think he knows what the fuck to do with either of these guys.
I think he's just doing his best to instill confidence in both of them. And that's what...
I'm starting to wonder if he should just start Tom Savage and forget about fucking Hoyer and Mallett. Because Hoyer is clearly way too inconsistent to rely on in late game situations. I don't care if he had 300 yards off the bench against the Colts. He still threw the game losing interception.
When he
on a just horrendous throw that should have been nowhere near Mike Adams. It should have been Mike Adams was 3 yards off where he should have been and came up with the interception. Yep. Wrong. Mallett is clearly not a good sport. He's a poor sport because he spent the entire second half with his arms folded, pouting like he's in Pee Wee.
It was bad.
Bad. I'm seriously, if I were Bill O'Brien, I would teach those two a lesson by starting Tom Savage. Start Tom Savage next game. What do you have to lose at this point? What do you really have to lose? That being said, great. After losing 2 straight, we win 3 straight. We've seen this before, albeit it's come in a completely unconventional way as opposed to last year. O-line seems to have gotten it together. J.J. Watt didn't get a sack or even a solo tackle against the Colts.
He
got like 2 assisted tackles.
Okay, because he didn't have a tackle in the first half.
Nope. He got like 2 assisted tackles in the second half. But yeah, no solo tackles, no sacks.
It's a good job.
Beautiful.
It's a good job by the Indy offensive line.
Kudos to our O-line coach for realizing, let's get Joe Wrights in there. Not super experienced as a starter, but we get him at right tackle, and it frees up our man Jack Muhort to move back to his left guard position, which is where he's needed to be from day one, because he's fantastic. But when you've got the guy basically being a journeyman offensive lineman because of all the injuries, it doesn't get the guy any significant reps at one position. Exactly. How are you going to expect him to be adept at 4 different positions when he's barely had enough experience at one? So kudos to the Colts for finally figuring out who we can put in at right tackle to get Jack back to his respective spot. And I'm just giving out kudos because that's all there is to do. I'm not going to get into whether we can, what we can do in the next 5 games, because frankly, our next 5 games are a fucking nightmare, especially if we're still figuring out if Andrew Luck can play. Pats, Saints, Panthers, Broncos, Falcons. That's not fun.
Pats an L, Saints a W. I would absolutely take the Colts against the Saints. 100%.
We'll Colts with Matt Hasselbeck?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I'm going to be... I. We had a brief discussion on it. You were not super high on Hat Masselbeck in his Jaguars game. I was. I watched the game.
He was okay.
I watched the game.
Okay. He was great. He was great against the
completed
Texans.
In his Jaguars game, he completed 63% of his passes. He threw for at least 250 yards, and he scored a touchdown. For a guy that hasn't started a game in, I don't know, a billion years.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good. Watched the Texans game, too. I was thoroughly impressed. And you know what I really liked about it? And I don't mean to interrupt bit. Involving Andre Johnson and Frank Gore.
Who is still just as good. And he was an FU mode against the Texans.
Oh, he totally was, dude. For sure.
That he had less yards, obviously, but that reminded me of the Steve Smith Carolina game last year.
He's got something to prove. He's got something to prove. Let me go too soon. I still have some production.
Not only did they let him go, but they said he couldn't start in the NFL anymore.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
that's why they let him go. They said he couldn't be a starter. They said he could not start in the NFL anymore.
Yeah, that's...
That's dumb.
Yeah.
And to see the way your team's performing now, I bet you're kicking yourself a little bit.
Much love
one.
To DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, but that's a bunch
kidding?
Of crap.
I love
Oh, no,
DeAndre
I know
Hopkins.
You do. I'm just
I
saying...
I love DeAndre. He's on my fantasy team. I fucking love that dude so much.
That dude's but, lighting it up on a terrible offense.
But that being said, I love the way Hasselbeck has played. But you know what the key is? Any quarterback can play well with our receivers if they can just get pass protection.
Yep.
And that was the key. We have not allowed a sack in two games. That's one of the most unheard of things since Andrew Luck came into the league. 8 quarters without a sack. If we do that when Andrew Luck can finally come back, if he's not as hurt as people are insinuating that he is, we still might have a shot at this thing.
Oh, totally. Oh, no, that's the thing.
If a 40-year-old journeyman for the past few years can come in and throw for almost 600 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions in 2 games.
Against
I don't
division
care,
opponents?
I don't care who they're, yeah. I don't care if they're against bad teams.
They're
sure,
your division opponents.
Again, yeah, who cares? They're against the division opponents.
You gotta beat them.
If he can do that, imagine what Andrew Luck with some actual fucking pass protection
and health
can do.
Yes.
Yeah, and health. So I don't have much else to say about it. We'll see what happens over the next 7 days. Luckily, we get a 10-day break. Luck's basically going to have 3 weeks off by the time we play the Pats. I cannot foresee that Pats game going great.
No, I don't.
But
either.
If Andrew Luck can get into some kind of rhythm, if he comes back against the Pats, if he can get into some kind of rhythm, if we can play decent, that sets us up for another 4 games that admittedly are the hardest part of our schedule. And if we can just get into some kind of rhythm against the Pats, whether we win or not, which we probably won't, and if we can go on a run and beat the Saints, Panthers, Broncos, Falcons before we get back against our division, I could foresee us winning our next 11 out of 12.
And that's the thing is, you know, it doesn't sound sexy, but you can go, as the Colts with the division you play in, you could probably go 8-8 and still make the postseason.
Sure.
And
at this point, yeah.
And at that point, all you're thinking is, all right, we'll regular season for show, but we'll postseason for dough, and we'll start lighting it up. I mean, I honestly
would rather, as much as I want a really good game between the Colts and Pats in Lucas Oil Stadium, if Andrew Luck is not 95%, 100%, I would rather Matt just start again, and I would rather him go out and have a competent performance, us take the loss, go 3-3, and then that'll be a month for Luck. And if by that point he's not good to go, then there's something seriously wrong and we've got to start thinking about next season. But if a month off can get Luck back to where he needs to be and we can go on a string of winning 7 out of our next 8 games after that Pats game, we're fine. We can finish 10-6.
Well, that's the thing is, whether you finish 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, with the way your division is, the goal right now is the goal.
Luck healthy for the playoffs.
Exactly. You're just trying to get a healthy Andrew Luck into the playoffs, and then once you get into the playoffs, as Eli Manning and the goddamn New York Giants have shown, once you're in, it's anybody's ball game. It doesn't matter.
January Joe has showed the same thing.
Exactly. So at this point, I think that needs to be the approach for the Colts. They are.
Yep.
Far from dead. So I think
and just seriously, I can't say it enough. Hats off to Matt Hasselbeck with a staph infection. He was in the hospital 24 hours before the game. He did not practice once.
I think
I'm so impressed with him. I'm so fucking impressed with him.
And here's the thing. I read a tweet. They were like, take age out of it. Take, you know, struggling Houston Texans defense out of it. Matt Hasselbeck's a pro.
Yes.
He's been doing this a long time. He backed up Brett Favre in Green Bay, had some excellent years in Seattle, under Mike Holmgren. Matt Hasselbeck knows how to play this game, and he has a solid understanding of what the Colts want to do offensively. I was super impressed. I know you were, and granted, you know, I was catching you, you know, post Sunday. I mean, it was an emotional day, I'm sure. You know, you're not used to barely walking away from games from Jacksonville. And so when we were talking about it, you were like, yeah, I don't think, you know, he was that great. And it didn't look great. I'm not saying Matt
wasn't pretty.
No, it didn't look pretty. But if you look at the box score, when your quarterback, regardless of age, regardless of opponent, if he can complete over 60% of his passes, score touchdowns, and not throw picks, that is what a game manager looks like. And right now, Hasselbeck has proven he can manage a game.
Yeah. My only last thing, quick message to Dwayne Allen. Buddy, yes, we won that game. Don't disrespect J.J. Watt, because he's just going to come out and kick your fucking ass next time. Yeah. And that's no disrespect to Dwayne Allen, because I think he's a good player.
Oh, hell yeah.
He knows how to pass and run block as a tight end. He's good at that. Very he's also efficient. Good at catching touchdowns. I love Dwayne Allen, but don't disrespect the man.
Like, yeah.
I don't care if he didn't record a solo tackle or a sack against us. He's still arguably the best defensive player in the NFL.
He said it a week ago or 2 weeks ago. He was like, man, I'm... And I don't think he... If he was, I don't really have a problem with it. I don't think he was calling out his teammates or anything like that. But he basically just said, I'm being triple-teamed and double-teamed more than I ever have in my life. Jadeveon Clowney, you gotta wake up, bro.
He needs to step the
You need to get your shit together.
He needs to step the hell up.
This team has invested a lot in you.
I didn't hear his name called once in that game the other day.
Neither did I. And that's the thing. Everybody's focusing on Watt, as they should. Dude was the defensive player of the year. In my opinion, and I think your opinion, should have been last year's MVP.
Agreed.
Love Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is nasty. But J.J. Watt should have been last year's most valuable
player.
Sorry,
Adam, but it's the truth.
Exactly. I love Rodgers.
Me too. But it's J.J. Watt all day.
Great quarterback.
Aaron Rodgers didn't catch any touchdowns.
No, exactly.
Aaron Rodgers didn't basically play three positions.
I mean, but that's the thing. Like, when it really boils down to it, Watt was so much more valuable to the Texans. Without Watt,
I don't know what it is. And that's where I think we've lost the meaning of most valuable.
And I think you were right. I think we should just change it. It should be MVQB.
Yeah.
Just call it
or
what
at
it
least
is.
The rare occasion we
MVOP.
Get, yeah, just call it MVOP because that's all. It
if it happens to be
MVS.
A running back,
right?
You know, I has a receiver ever won?
No.
Great trivia question, but yeah,
no.
I
don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Man, we spent a lot of time on that.
This is what we do.
It's always longer episodes when it's just you and me.
It's an epidemic, but I like it.
All right, man. Let's transition. Quick update, I can't believe this with the way their postseason history has gone, but the LA Dodgers just pulled out a 5-2 victory against the Mets.
I saw it.
I am shocked.
When
they were down 2-1 in the eighth, I'm shocked that they came back and won
that. If you're listening to my coworker Connor, I'm sorry. He was at the game tonight. He was super, super excited, bailed on work early to go catch him. East Coast kid. Hasn't seen his Mets play in a while. Hasn't seen his Mets in the postseason in quite a long time. And had the opportunity to go see him tonight. Yeah.
So I have some notes that don't... I mean, I guess they kind of pertain to the way this game... the way the outcome of Game 2 was. But I basically wrote down, if Greinke doesn't get a win, the series is over. Because... Kershaw did not get a win. Sadly, he can't get any run support in October.
He pitched his ass off.
And I'm sorry. Against an explosive offense like the Mets.
The fact
in
that he...
a game one of a divisional series.
In your house.
You only give up... You give up 3 runs on 5 hits and 6 2/3. You should be able to get a win off that. I know it's not... He didn't pitch perfect... He didn't get to pitch late into the game, but
your team only gives you one run of support and you're Clayton Kershaw, you're not gonna, that's not conducive to winning postseason.
This is October baseball. This is October baseball. You need more production. You need it. You don't
squeak out one run wins. You don't.
Credit where credit is due. DeGrom.
Oh my God.
Lights
masterful.
Out.
Masterful.
Very, very.
Masterful. 13 Ks over 7. Ridiculous.
Very, very, very good performance by him. I completely agree.
Yeah, no, not taking away anything from him. But if you're the Dodgers, you've been in this position before. Recently, unlike the Mets, you should be able to send out your best pitcher and give him more than a run of run support.
I completely agree.
It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. With the kind of talent you have on that team, it's inexcusable. That being said, I don't believe that Greinke technically got this win because...
No, he was down when he left.
Right, he was down when he left, but that being said...
He only gave up two
runs through... I think he pitched 7.
I was talking with a buddy of mine at work, Connor, and I asked him, I was like, wait, Greinke's pitching tonight, right? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, Greinke's a lefty. He's like, yeah. And I was like, Yoenis Cespedes is a righty, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, Cespedes is homering tonight.
And he crushed one.
He blasted one. And but
luckily, the Dodgers actually pulled their shit together and got some runs for the first time in postseason.
Recent
postseason history. So that being said, I'll scratch some of what I was going to talk about.
Sure.
But, so it's tied 1-1 going to Game 3. Who wins this series and why?
I'm taking the Mets. And I'm taking the Mets in 4. I thought the Mets... I honest to goodness thought the Mets would take these two games in LA. And then series... Because it goes 2-2-1. Because it's a best of 5, correct?
Yeah,
I think
best of 5, yeah.
If we have that wrong, I'm sorry.
I think it's 2-2-1.
I think it is. I'm sorry if I'm wrong to our listeners. If you have feedback, we'd be happy to hear it.
That's the only way it would make sense.
I think so. Yeah, exactly. I thought the Mets were going to win tonight, and then they were going to take the first... They were going to get desperate, and they were going to take a game in New York. I thought the Dodgers were going to take a game in New York. I thought the Mets were going to take the first two games in L.A. The Dodgers were going to take the next one, and then I thought the Mets were going to wrap it up. And the main reason why I thought that... The track record so far of the Dodgers in the postseason, like you said, they haven't showed up. There hasn't been a ton of run support. There wasn't a ton of runs. I'm not trying to shit on the Dodgers. They won the NL West. They played good baseball. They deserve to be in the postseason. It's an odd year for the Giants. That's all I'm saying. The Giants are going to come back firing on all cylinders next year. I'm not trying to take anything away. I just don't think when I look at this Dodgers team, I don't think they're built for a long postseason run. I don't. I'm not a huge, super big believer in Puig in big spots.
Well, he's also, you saw that, right? He's also coming off the bench right now. Like, he's coming off the bench because he's hurt. I don't know if it would go all the way into the World Series if they were to get there, but Donnie Mattingly said that Puig will be off the bench for the majority of this postseason because he's hurt. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
I did not know that.
It just came out yesterday that they said that.
That was my feeling on it. I love Adrian Gonzalez. Gonzo's
my man.
Awesome,
dude.
Great hitter. One of the best, especially in the National League. I don't think the Dodgers are built for a long postseason run. I think the Mets are young, super confident. I think the fact that the way that they were able to win the NL East in the fashion that they did was huge for them. Because the Nationals looked like they had it midway through this season. Mets made a deal, brought in Cespedes, turned everything around. Even when Cespedes goes on, there were times where he went 0-13, but then
he's definitely a streaky bat hitter. For sure, hitter,
and like anybody,
he comes up big.
And like anybody with a big bat, they're going to strike out a lot. They're going to go through the ruts, but when they pop, they go. And I thought it was going to be Mets take two in LA, drop the first one in New York, and then wrap things up and take the next one. Obviously, now they got to take the next two. I guess my main thing was I thought the Mets were going to get overconfident after winning these first two. Now I think this might just even speed up the process. I think they'll take the next two games in New York. I think they were riding a little bit high off of beating Kershaw in the fashion that they did. Thought that they probably were going to have it rolling tonight. I'm still taking the Mets in four.
I love the Mets pitching staff.
Hell yeah,
I think they're poised to be like the next like great pitching staff like for a good time to come, especially with Jacob DeGrom leading them like this. Good God, he's so good. I'm taking the Mets in five. I think it's gonna go all the way back to Dodger Stadium.
Yeah,
but I think the Mets are gonna pull it out because, frankly, they just know how to support their pitchers better. I don't think the Dodgers can really get it done long term. And I think it's even when Puig is good, he hasn't exactly been good off the bench. So the fact that he's coming off the bench at this point, I don't think there's any chance that he gets into any kind of hitting rhythm over the next three games. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
I think it's the Mets' time to shine, and they're going to win in five.
Straight up. I agree.
All right. The other game that was today was the
Cubbies and Cards.
Cubs squeaked it out 6-3. Not squeaked it out. They played really well. They won 6-3. And that was after getting shut out 4-0 yesterday. My big takeaways from game one, which I got to watch some of.
That's the other thing. I haven't been able to watch any of these games, which sucks.
The big takeaway for me was Chris Bryant, Starlin Castro, and Rizzo were 0-21 combined batting through their first two postseason games.
Yikes.
Not going to win a series with that.
Definitely not.
And then I saw that Bryant and Castro each started 0-2, I believe, tonight, which was like, whoa, if they can't get something going, they're not going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Looks like they got it together and ended up scoring a decent amount of runs tonight, but that's going to be the big thing for the Cubs. The problem is not in their pitching. They're kind of like the Dodgers. The problem is not in their pitching.
For sure.
It's in getting consistent run support. And, you know, some of that has to do with the fact that Starlin Castro is, I don't think he's that great. Also, you've got rookies who haven't been in this position before.
And that's where I'm at with the Cubbies. If you're a Chicago Cubs fan, regardless of how this postseason goes, you should be feeling very confident about where you're headed.
Without a doubt. I just think
right now they're so young. There's a lot.
So good, and they've had so many guys that have been in this position so many times. You've heard me say it. They're like the Spurs of the MLB.
And I think that is the perfect analogy for the St. Louis Cardinals. They have created...
They're boring.
And it's so cliche. And it's so cliche, too. But they have developed a culture of winning. They just have. It's why guys can just step up and kill the way they have. I'm still taking the Cards in the series. Nothing against the Cubbies and everything they've accomplished. Joe Maddon's going to get a huge run at this. He's going to get a big run at this next year. Barring significant injury, the Cubs should find themselves in it in a while. And I don't even mean in it in a wild card sense. I mean, like, they will consistently, if they can keep this up and like I said, stay healthy, they will consistently battle with the St. Louis Cardinals for years to come for the NL Central. I really believe that.
All right. I'm going to actually... Oh, this is so hard. And the only reason it's hard to pick is because of the man who's pitching in Game 3, and that's Jake Arrieta.
Okay, look
the
good.
The fact that he's pitching in Game 3 makes me think that the Cubs can actually take the lead in this series.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He's very good.
He is a freaking monster. Like...
But now it shifts to Chicago, too, right?
I don't know if he gives up a run. Like, he's that good.
He's really good. He's really good.
I mean, I think it if he can't pitch a complete game, which complete games are definitely more rare in postseason situations because you end up having to throw more pitches always. It's just a fact. But Game 3 is definitely coming down to what the Cubby relievers can do. And Arrieta will not blow it. Like, he will not give up more than a run, I absolutely guarantee it.
And I know that we're still just on NL right now, but I've discussed this, and in once you get to the postseason, especially in today's game of baseball, bullpen is a huge deal. It's why I think the Royals... are set and primed to take a run at. I do think the Cardinals, but that aside, I think the Cardinals bullpen is just better than the Cubbies right now.
Agreed.
They just have more depth
And I agree with that, and I also agree with that sentiment because, man, watching that Rangers-Blue Jays game go into 14 yesterday afternoon, and seeing the Rangers pitch the last seven scoreless with five different relievers.
That series not going the way I thought it's going.
No.
I did not see that series going
the way it is. It solidifies your statement. It solidifies your statement that the bullpen is absolutely crucial in the playoffs, in the postseason, because Cole Hamels didn't pitch that great. I mean, he didn't pitch terrible. Four runs on six hits, it's not an awful, awful postseason performance, but it's certainly not what you want out of your main guy. And to the fact that you got the final seven innings pitched scoreless by five different relievers, that solidifies your statement.
And that's the other thing. I don't know. You've been watching. You've been able to catch some of the games.
Mm-hmm.
The Cards are activating Wainwright off of the DL out of the bullpen.
Holy shit. Okay, yeah.
So that was announced on September the 29th.
I didn't even see that. I missed that.
So the fact that you've got that kind of arm coming out of your pen, I think it's going to make it really, really
tough for Chicago. Just solidified it for me. It's the Cardinals in five.
I agree.
It's the Cardinals in five.
I still think Mets taken for it. I think this series goes the distance.
I think Arrieta gets a win game three, mm-hmm. and then the Cardinals, because of their experience, get the final two games.
Arrieta pitched fucking lights out against the Pirates.
He's
awesome.
So good.
He's really good. On the
Ridiculous.
Road, too, it was pretty good.
All right, kind of touched on the Rangers-Blue Jays,
that's not going the way you thought it was,
and it's certainly not going the way Sports Illustrated thought it was going to go.
Yep, you're dead right.
The Blue Jays are on the
what
cover
I
right
said
there.
Once, I mean, going back episodes and episodes ago, once they made their major trade deadline moves, I thought they were a lock at least for the ALCS, and for a while, I thought they were World Series bound, and I didn't think it was going to be close.
You and I were in agreement, and you know the one thing we forgot? David Price
not
can't
the
win
postseason.
In the postseason.
And I knew that.
I knew it too, but
I thought maybe the one thing he's never had an offensive lineup like this to back him up. I mean, this is an incredible... I mean, and, you know, injuries. I know that Josh Donaldson was injured... In game one.
They had a lot of injuries in game one. It was a really unlucky start to that divisional series.
And I don't know, did Donaldson play in game two? I don't, I'd be on, honestly asking because I really don't know. But in either case, there's still injuries to deal with. And
yeah, he did.
I did not see it going this way. I really didn't. No disrespect to the Rangers. I just, honest to goodness... Even if that was the other thing. In my mind, it was like, even if they can't get the support with the pitching rotation of the bullpen or just pitching in general, I just thought they were going to just smash their way and make their way to the ALCS. That's just – that was my understanding. I really thought that was going to happen. The fact that when they made their trade, what were they – how many games back were they? They were like 8 or 9 games back
something
from the
like
Yankees,
that.
And they came on strong. I mean, obviously the whole CC Sabathia thing, that was diseased. Yeah.
Yeah, Price gave up – Price pitched 7 innings, gave up 5 hits, 5 earned runs, and 2 walks, and only had 5 strikeouts. And that's and he gave up 2 home runs. That's
at home.
You need better than that from your guy.
And now you got to go to Arlington, and it sucks to play in Arlington.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. I watched yesterday's game. They don't have the relief to take a game past 9 innings.
They don't.
So,
and Donaldson,
I'm gonna give it to the Rangers in 3.
And Donaldson said he was like, "I feel good. I felt fine, especially once the game got started." This is MLB.com. I feel good. I felt fine, especially once the game got started. I felt pretty good. I was able to give everything I had. He homered. They scored 4 runs, but I think you're right. The depth's not there with the arms, and it's so crucial this time of the year.
When you've got a team, when you're going up against a team that can pitch into the 14th inning and barely give up and not give up a run, and you can't do that, it's not going to happen for you. Like, the relief is just not there.
Super frustrating. Super frustrating.
It's over in 3, I think. It's over in 3.
Yep. And you know what? Credit to the Rangers making a move to get Cole Hamels.
Yes.
Good move. Underrated move. I put way more stock in the Jays grabbing Price. And I did clearly, I don't know what it is. When guys switch from National League to American League, I don't know what it is. I feel like there's going to be way more of a struggle. I said the same thing about Scherzer going from Detroit to Washington. Wasn't necessarily the case the first half of the season. Obviously, the Nationals had their problems. I don't know if necessarily Scherzer was part of that necessarily.
The problem was in their manager.
Yes. And, yeah, man. I think I gotta agree with you.
It's sad to
it's
say
because
I wanted the Blue Jays to have
too.
A storied run through the playoffs. Well,
I
wanted another Royals of last year, but
well, and that was I'm just gonna be honest with you. I don't that would have been cool for me. I just really wanted a Royals Jays ALCS.
Two totally
different clubs. One built on offense, the other built on depth and arms and speed and farm system.
I
do too, man. And you're a White Sox fan, and I'm a Twins fan.
I know, it sucks, but I love the Royals.
But they're fun to watch. They're young and they're fun, and they like Fetty Wap, and it's a good time in Kansas City.
It's a good time to be a Kansas City Royals fan.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so let's get to that. Stros Royals.
Kansas.
Game 2 tomorrow. Dallas Keuchel is pitching, and he's a monster. But what do you think?
I'm thinking Royals.
I wrote down one thing in my notes today. Never count out the Royals. They've been in this position before being 365 days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they know what they're doing now.
Well,
they've been in this position before, and they were one of the best records in the MLB. I love this team, but not only that, this team is fantastic.
I think also Carlos Gomez for the Stros is ailing. He was huge for them in the wild card game against the Yankees. Obviously, the Yankees were hurting pretty bad anyways. But that being said, yeah, no, it's so tough to beat the Royals. If you are not beating the Royals after 6 innings, I don't know what shot you have. I legitimately don't know what shot you have. Their bullpen is that good.
Game 1 was a fluke.
I think so. I thought they were going to sweep them.
Only getting 2 runs. Game 1 was a fluke.
And granted, it's not lost on me that the Royals struggled down the stretch a little bit. That being said, they wiped the floor of the Twins that final game of the season, the final series of the season. And to me, that felt like, okay, they're ready. Like, they're ready. They're in postseason mode. Twins had everything to play for. Not that the Royals, I mean, they had home field advantage throughout to play for. I don't have any problem seeing the Royals winning on the road. I don't have any problem seeing them winning at home. They, like I said, they've got great depth at bullpen.
They're a dominant team.
I agree.
And they do it without being dominant on the scoreboard, if that makes sense.
No, I completely understand.
They don't have to score 13 runs.
They don't do it. They don't do it with the long ball. They don't do it the way that, like, the Jays do it. You know?
I'm convinced we could go the entire playoffs if they make it all the way to the series again. I'm convinced we could not see them score more than 5 runs in a game, and they'll still win more games than they'll lose because they're that good. They're that good defensively. They're that good on the mound, and they've got more depth than pretty much any other team in this postseason right now. And it's scary. It's scary if you have to face them. And if Dallas can't get a win for the Stros, then there's no way the Royals are losing this series.
I think you're right. It was insane to see, like, because in game one, the Stros were they were up 4-2 before the sixth, and the sixth hit, and the Royals turned it on, and
They're so good.
They're very good. They're a very good club. And it's fun to see. It's fun to see the team still do it the way of the farm system. And I like that. I personally. That's the type of baseball that
I
like.
I wish I could beat the Royals, but I can't.
I wish I could beat the Royals. They're young. They do it the right way.
And they're
respectful. Only guy,
they're respectful, too.
I don't like, what's his face? Is it Robin Ventura? Ace Ventura that they call him? He's a little bit too fiery for me. He's a little bit too cocky for me. He's about the only Royal I have a problem with. But outside of that, I love Eric Hosmer. I really do. I think he's such a boss. He's a great first baseman.
Who are you talking about?
Robin Ventura.
Robin Ventura's my manager.
Who am I thinking of?
Yeah, he's the White Sox manager.
Here. Ace Ventura. Royals, the young kid,
Ventura.
Yordano Ventura.
Okay,
that's
okay.
What it is.
I was like, wait, what?
He bugs me.
Why?
The way he carries himself. I understand there's a lot of unwritten rules in baseball, but I don't like him barking at guys as they're running to first after he gets them out. The whole A's scuffle, I think, was largely caused by him.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
That's just kind of where I'm at with it.
He's starting game four.
He's young. He'll grow up. He's good. He's really good. I remember we were watching MLB Network, and I remember Pedro Martinez said if he's not so wild with his follow through, he would remind me more of myself. He's a good pitcher, but just the way he carries himself. He's the only Royal I hate. Long story longer.
Okay. Did you say who's winning the series?
I thought the Royals were going to sweep it, and I still think the Royals are going to sweep it.
Oh, you mean so you're taking them to win the next two and
yeah.
just close it out?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going Royals in 4-2. They're so good. I love Houston. I think Houston's a great, great ball club, but if the Royals can overcome Keuchel, then there's nothing stopping them after that.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree.
God, I love postseason baseball.
I do too. Oh, but that's the other thing. Is postseason baseball super unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
It's nobody saw the Royals
we can get
coming
none
on
of these
last
predictions
year.
Right.
Oh, hell yeah. It's all a crapshoot at
the
this
Cubs
point.
The Cubs could win in 4. The Stros could win in 4. Who the fuck knows? Like, that's what's so exciting about it. Because, in the first rounds of, like, NBA series and even a lot of times NHL series, you kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But in the MLB, dude, anything can happen. Literally anything.
Oh,
October,
all bets are off.
No one picked the Royals to go to the World Series last year, and if you did, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah.
But they did, and they took it to Game 7. Like,
yeah. No, crazy. I honestly thought the Royals were gonna sweep them, but I think at this point now they'll close them out. They'll take the next two, wrap it up, game over.
Any last thoughts, comments, questions, concerns?
I guess the only thing I have to say, we don't talk about it much on this show. Right now, your Indiana Fever and my Minnesota Lynx are doing it up in what has been quite an epic WNBA finals.
That buzzer beater by who?
Maya Jones?
Maya Moore?
I'm terrible with it. Yeah, that's I'm not. Bad. My mom is watching a lot.
Oh, my mom is too.
Yeah, so she's a big fan. But yeah, no.
It's clearly been an exciting series.
Absolutely.
I can't say that I've been watching it.
Not at all. It's clearly been an exciting series. Saw the buzzer beater in the box scores. I've been listening.
Crazy buzzer beater.
I listen to Twin City Sports Radio, and I've been told it's good. So here's to a good series to that. And to good football tomorrow on Sunday.
Yeah, or today, or yesterday, whenever the
Whenever you're listening to this, I hope you enjoyed your Sunday.
Well, with that being said, I think we're going to get out of here. We always go way longer on these episodes than we do when the other two idiots are here. This I don't know why true. That is.
I don't know. I really don't. I don't have any theories. Yeah, we just get into game management mode when we have everybody talking.
That's probably.
And we're more looking at the clock. Maybe we just think that when it's just the two of us that we're not going to go.
Well, we do both live in our studio.
This is true.
I mean our living room.
This is true. This is
true. We don't both live in the living room. We both have our own room. Never mind.
We got you.
Well, that's going to do it for episode Shaq. Episode Shaq. Of the 51-yard line. For Drew Willers.
Thank you very much for listening. Subscribe, share, tell your friends. Oh, he's not here tonight. Super kudos to our co-host, Christian Schneider, on two very well-done articles.
Yeah, he's been killing the game as of late. Really impressed.
Especially the Larry Brown article. If you're a basketball enthusiast, I highly recommend giving it a read. I thought the Larry Brown article
even
was
if you're not,
done.
It's just a really well-written article.
I was a big fan of that one. So kudos to Christian Schneider.
Yep.
Get well to Steve Cravens. Staph infections are brutal, I'm told. So
we're putting that on. All right. Well, all right. So for Drew Willers.
Thank you, guys.
For the invisible Steve Cravens. Fuck the Flyers! Christian Schneider.
He would say that.
Fuck everyone, they're all dirtbags. Fuck the dirtbags, fuck them.
Heels!
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 Heels! Those are my imitations of our co-hosts. I hope you like them. Yeah, they're pretty spot on, I would say.
I thought you nailed it.
Thanks, buddy. I'm Tyler Berry, and we will see you all next week.
Bye!